Thank you very much. We are here to bring you the story behind the music you love and to introduce you to the men who make that music at Orchestra Hall. You'll also get to hear an informal and easy-to-understand discussion of music and its interesting personalities. And what's more, you, listening right now, have an opportunity to win two main floor tickets for a concert by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And now let's turn to the page in our symphony scrapbook, which tells of one of the most mellow instruments of the orchestra, the violoncello. And we have with us to tell us about and demonstrate this instrument, Mr. Dudley Powers, principal cellist of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Dudley, I'm sure our listeners will be pleased to have you identify the passage you played to introduce this program and perhaps play some more from that symphony composition.
This is the theme to the Rococo Variations of Tchaikovsky for cello and orchestra, and I'll play now the entire theme of the work.
Across a book recently called What Makes an Orchestra by Jan Ballet. It's supposed to be a book for children, but I like what he says about the cello. I'd like to read a few sentences from it. It said, each member of the string family, like the three bears, is bigger than the last. The cello is so big that it cannot be held in the player's hands, but has to rest on the floor between his knees. Its sound, too, is big, strong, deep, and very rich. Even its name, violoncello, is big. We call it cello for short. Everyone loves the cello, not only the people who listen to music, but the men who write it. Its mellow, almost human baritone voice often leads the whole orchestra. It thrills you and makes you want to sing along. It can sing of love and hope and high ambition. It can sing of beauty and goodness and of sadness, too. You think that's a good description of the cello's tone?
It certainly gives quite a versatile viewpoint of it.
Well, the cello is a very important instrument in the orchestra, and you certainly have abundant opportunity to carry the melodic line or to play solos in symphonic compositions. And I was wondering if you could give us a sample of that, where the cello does have an important solo passage.
Yes, I'd be glad to do that, Mr. Kuiper. I have here today a solo from the Impressions of Italy by Charpentier. That would be very interesting.
I notice that you're using steel strings on your cello. What's the advantage of the steel over a
Well, we gut? Use steel strings a great deal on the cello now. For the last 10 years, I think almost all of the cellists in this country, at least, are using them. They're considerably more powerful than the gut strings, and they're also very clear in tone through the entire register, whereas the gut strings used to be rather impure in tone in the higher notes. And incidentally, they're very much more lasting. If we have hot weather or damp weather in the summertime, we don't worry very much about string breakage.
I think there's still one member of the cello section of the orchestra who insists on using...
Mr. Ratcher still uses gut string.
Yeah. Well, have you ever had an experience of a string breaking while you were playing?
Yes. Fortunately, not when I was playing a solo passage. That's something we hope will not happen.
Well, is that a cello's nightmare?
Not particularly. It's so rare that it doesn't often happen, but nevertheless, the person next to you is waiting in case it should be.
And now, you gave us an illustration of a cello solo, and in my question, I included something else, and that's the many passages where the cello carries, or the cello section carries the melodic line of a composition. And I was wondering if you could give us an illustration of that.
Yes,
I know that occurs very frequently in symphonic literature.
I have particularly in mind the passage of the opening of the third act of Meistersinger, where the cellos play entirely by themselves in a whole section with an opening melody.
Lower range of the cello. Lead me to the next question. What is the range of the instrument?
Well, there is a range in the orchestra of perhaps 4 octaves for orchestra writing. And solo passage will go up sometimes 5 and even a 6th octave if you like to include harmonics.
Why the distinction? Why is the symphonic literature limited to 4?
Because of the practicality of sound as far as the top range goes. So that if you get up to the 4th octave, which would be up in this neighborhood, much higher than that in a group of instruments does not sound clear, whereas a soloist can occasionally play higher and have it sound well.
Now, could you illustrate the range in some way?
Yes, I think perhaps the opening theme to the Heldenleben of Richard Strauss gives a very good illustration. It doesn't use the entire 4 octaves. It only uses about 3 to be definite with it.
Are the technical devices that composers require of you on the cello about the same as for the other string instruments, violin, viola? I was thinking of such things as a pizzicato, harmonics, glissando, different types of bowing, and so on.
Yes, the effects are very much the same. I would say the only difference between the larger instruments and the small instruments is in their ability to produce these effects. Sometimes extreme speed is limited on a large instrument compared with a smaller one where the distances are smaller. But otherwise, they're very much the same type of thing.
Could you illustrate some of these?
Yes, there's a passage here in the Stravinsky Firebird Suite that is typically orchestral. You won't find any melodies in it, but it shows you what the cellos are asked to do in the midst of a full orchestration.
Could you review those and tell us just what happened?
In the first case, it is a series of harmonics played on the one string, the D string, where you slide the finger from about the middle of the string up to near the top end and back down again, and it produces that sound of the harmonics going up.
What's the difference between that and the glissando?
A glissando would be with the finger pressed solidly on the string and would give you a sound like this.
Good. Now the next effect was, I think it was pizzicato.
Pizzicato, yes. Simply the plucking of the string instead of using the bow in this fashion. And then the judicious mixture of arco, which is our term for using the bow, the harmonic, and the pizzicato at the same time.
Now, what was that last? Is that a special kind of bowing?
The last one was no bowing in particular. It was just a short note, but the harmonic
was
the top note.
Good. Now, I introduce you as a principal cellist. I wonder if you could comment on the responsibilities which a principal player has, that is sometimes called the first chairman.
Yes, the principal of any string section in an orchestra is responsible for two things. One is the leadership of his section, which includes the marking of all bowings in the parts to be sure that they're alike, and cooperation with other principals to make sure that the different sections are bowed alike. Also to lead the sections in regard to any requested balance that the conductor wants to make, to be sure that it comes through as nearly as possible, to play your own part as correctly as possible and be an inspiration for the section as possible. And the second duty is that of a soloist when you are requested to play solos, either in the form of concertos or in the form of incidental solos in orchestral works.
You're sort of an assistant conductor part of the time.
Yes, with two or three assistants, maybe.
Or a boss of the section. Well, thanks ever so much, Dudley, for this very interesting exposition of a very lovely instrument. I should add that one of my secret ambitions for years has always been to know how to play the cello just enough to be able to fool around and produce some of the lovely tones that you have. Perhaps when it's time for retirement, I might not be too old to satisfy that ambition.
Oh, I think you should start at any time. It'd be a great pleasure to you.
Well, thanks ever so much for being with us. And now we're happy to send a pair of tickets for a concert by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra to Mr. Jack Flodden for his anecdote, which we're adding to our scrapbook. It concerns the late Pietro Mascagni, who was at one time at work in his studio in a Rome office building when a hurdy-gurdy man played his famous intermezzo from Cavalleria Rusticana out in the street and was playing it incorrectly. So Mascagni came down and showed him how it should be played. Next day, the man was there again, playing it right this time, but over its instrument was a sign which said, "Pupil of the great Pietro Mascagni." And thanks to Mr. Flodden for his interesting anecdote.